McKenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbore and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour here. Jonna Spilbore, Carol Pesci, this fella who's also on a microphone like the two of them, though not as quite as nice a microphone as Jonna's. She has a brand new one that she calls a Yeti, and she wants to know if she sounds like a Yeti. I don't know what a Yeti sounds like because I've never been that far north. But anyway, even if they exist. But anyway, we're here and we're back with another show. So hello, ladies. Good morning. Hope all is well.
All is well. And I'm excited about our guest this morning. I was just telling you off air. I don't want to give away too much. We're going to be talking in the second segment with Matt Tenney, author of multiple books. His latest book is The Magic of Mindful Self-Awareness, How to Stop Overthinking, Clear Your Mind, and Be Happy Almost All of the Time. Guys, I'm telling you, he's got a fascinating story you're going to want to stick around for. This book makes the access to peace and happiness so much simpler than I've ever understood from anybody else before. And I'll tell you what, I started it yesterday, and last night was one of the best nights of sleep I've had in a long time. And if that's all I get out of it, I'll take it. So excited to talk with him.
And that's fascinating to me. Are you going to tell us later when we do talk to him after the break why it is you're already sleeping better? Okay, so we'll save it. We'll save it for that. Okay, good.
Okay, yes, that sounds fine. That sounds fantastic. Oh. So
speaking of Yetis.
Yeah, exactly. Bad hair month lady.
Yeah, why, pray tell, Jonna, have you showed up under the alias today of bad hair month?
And I want to let you know, by the way, Spilbore, before you answer that Carol and I were talking before you jumped in about the fact that you're probably not going to turn on your video there so that we can say yay or nay. Yeah, exactly. Let us make the final decision for you.
No. I'll take no for 200, Bob. No.
I don't know. So listen, I don't know why I'm having a bad hair month, but I am having a bad hair month. And it could be a little psychological because you guys know, Susan, it's going to be 2 years. In a couple of months, it's going to be 2 years since I've had the world's worst haircut.
Oh, my God.
And you would never think, like, you know, I've had other semi bad haircuts over the course of my life, but this one was so bad that it actually has taken about 2 years to look normal. Like, if I needed to look normal now, I could probably do it. But what I had to do for the last 2 years is here's a little beauty secret. I had to get hair extensions because I could not leave the house with the haircut that I had. Anyway,
pause for a second. Wasn't the reason that you had to get the haircut because your hair kept breaking?
Right. So it wasn't like I went from fabulous hair to a bad haircut. I went from bad broken hair to an even worse haircut. And then the whole fix for me turned out to be hair extensions, which I have now gotten used to. But you don't get to see what your natural hair looks like when you have hair extensions in because you don't really ever get them taken out for any appreciable time until you decide to take them out. But so I'm at the point, I think, in my hair, quote, journey, end quote, where my hair is now, my natural hair is healthier and fuller and longer. So when you add to that the weight of somebody else's hair sewed onto your hair, it just, I feel like cousin it. That's all. my hair feels, most people would love to have this problem. My hair feels very thick and healthy and big. So
my hair feels big.
It feels big.
Yeah, she's regressing back to the 80s. Nice.
Yes. And that was good for the 80s. But for now,
It just feels like I'm having a bad hair month, but not in a negative. Like if the person who is responsible for my hair, who I absolutely adore and does a great job, is listening, this is not you. This is me. It's all me. It'll be fine.
And I have to tell you, it does sound a little bit creepy, almost horror movie-like, when you say, you know, the weight of not only my hair, but somebody else is attached to it.
Agreed.
You know, it's like the beginning of a horror film, and we'll call the film Extensions. You know, and it's what happens when the extensions, the hair extensions in your head, they interfere with your normal thought processes, and you start becoming the person of those hair extensions, possibly somebody who's dead.
Frankenberry.
Yeah.
Two things.
Okay.
Two things.
I'm counting.
Number one, I like your idea, except since you know nothing about no hair extensions, the people who donate the hair, this is real hair, it's somebody else's hair, they donate real hair. They do not have to be dead. They don't include the scalp. They only include the hair.
Okay, great. So instead, it's a real life living serial killer whose hair you're wearing instead of a dead one's. Nicely done. Good. Fantastic. Now,
apparently, you have forgotten that a while back, when I had to have a tooth problem fixed by using cadaver tooth powder or whatever it was.
It was piece of bone.
It was a cadaver bone. And I ended up inadvertently taking on the characteristics of the person whose bone it was. Now, no one said, hey, this bone belongs to Charlie. You know, he died in the South and he had a penchant for blueberry pie. But I ended up having a penchant for blueberry pie and talking with a Southern accent. Weeks until I could exorcise him from my mouth.
He started walking around going, bless your heart.
Inexplicably. So your idea, while novel, is actually a thing because it happened to me.
Okay, well, I will just look forward to the next transformation from teeth to hair and see what that does.
I have an extension question, a practical extension question, because I've never had them. How do you comb and or blow dry your hair without getting tangled up in them and yanking them out? Isn't that a pain? Okay.
Very good question. So here's the deal. There are, and because, don't get me wrong, this isn't the first time that I have experimented with extensions. I have had extensions from time to time over the course of my life. And there are different types. There are kinds that you can clip in. There are kinds that you can sew in. There are kinds that are individual. Like imagine if you just pulled a little clump of hair out of your head, put a clip on the end, and then stuck it in somebody else's head. There are wefts. There are different ways you can do this. And the way that I have them in now, there's a little technique. You kind of hold the part that's, you know, attached to your head down, and then you brush the rest. Let me explain to you what happens if you do not follow the directions. Okay. If you do not follow directions, one of two things will happen. You will end up kind of brushing them loose so that, you know, you got a piece hanging down and this one's falling out and this corner's curled up. And I actually one time, not that long ago, I think it was over, was it this summer? I mean, this Christmas, I was in the city with a relative who lives in another state and her new husband. And we were walking around the city and he came over to me and he touched my head, kind of like near the crown of my head. And he's like, I think you have a leaf or something in your in your hair. And it turned out that a piece of the weft had boing and was sticking out of my head. Because that can happen as they grow if you don't take care. The other fun thing that happens is you can turn into a Rastafarian, because if you don't brush thoroughly enough,
right,
the hair will get matted as right. if you are, you know, straight out of Jamaica, man. And that's happened to me too. That's always fun.
Are you almost done having them? Are you going to have them taken out?
Well, I just spent buku bucks on a brand new batch of hair.
Oh,
so I'm going to get the brand new batch of hair put in. And then maybe for the set, we'll see. You get kind of addicted to them, or at least I do. Like, I like them. And they're not that much of a pain in the butt. They used to be a much bigger pain in the butt. Not so much anymore, except for when you have a bad hair month because your hair is too full and luxurious.
Oh, Frankenberry, anything?
I got nothing. I got nothing. I mean, the only thing I can think of for hair extensions for me is, you know, walking around the floor of the barber shop with some duct tape and putting it on my head. You know, that's pretty much all I got. So I have nothing to relate to this.
Frankenberry, do you shave your head?
I don't shave. I don't shave it bald, but I go with the lowest. I go with the lowest minus the clips on the $18 clippers that I got from Walgreens 6 years ago.
Boy, weren't they a great investment.
My God, fantastic investment. My apologies to all you barbers out there whose money I haven't spent with you. But, you know, not spending $30 or so every 2 or 3 months for the last 6 or so years, courtesy of my $18 clippers. Yeah, well worth it.
You don't miss like the hot towel on the face and the shave with the razor that could actually kill you if they slip. You don't miss that?
I never did that.
You never did that?
No, just cut my hair and let me leave as quickly as possible.
Cut my hair and let me leave.
That's all.
Frankenberry, someday, like maybe for our next anniversary, like which I think will be our 14th anniversary, can we do, remember when we used to do little road trips? Can we do a little road trip and take you to a salon and have your hair wet?
No.
Please?
No.
Come on.
You didn't even finish asking.
No, it's a simple no. That's all.
Armpits?
Why
can
would
we get
I
your armpits?
What?
For fun.
No, Jonna, that wouldn't be fun. Okay,
I can feel the anxiety in his voice. Frankenberry, we can take you places where there's lots of people.
No, thank you.
See, for our 14th anniversary, you won't do that.
I'm not going to go to any kind of freaking pampering kind of situation. No way.
Legs, like around the ankle.
Yeah,
that won't hurt.
Around the ankle.
That's right. For those dresses that I wear that might come up a couple of inches above the ankle and get me in trouble with the elders. Yeah, that is definitely something that might be possible.
Do you guys remember that man groomer commercial, that radio commercial that was so funny?
Yes, I do.
And they actually sent us the audio and we...
And they sent us product.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah, didn't they send us? Didn't they send us one of them?
Oh my God, that was so funny! If you're listening, Google that, the man groomer commercial. Oh my gosh, hysterical.
It makes you wonder why they stopped. That was such an effective and funny commercial. Why would they ever stop?
I don't know. Maybe it was only on. I don't remember whether I heard it on FM radio or like satellite radio or.
Maybe it's because people didn't buy their product.
No, the visual. Did you ever see it on like TV or YouTube? The video was fantastic.
No, they had a video.
Yeah, they would use like trees.
Yeah. All right, I think we got to call this discussion right here. I know I brought it up, but that's enough. Just look it up. You're welcome.
Okay.
Yeah, that was really something. Look who you're talking. I love a good funny commercial.
You write a lot of them.
When you make a serious subject funny, even better.
I remember my favorite commercial ever that you made, and somebody sent you a hate email over it too.
I used to get a lot of hate email.
Did you really? Yeah.
And then it changed, and now it's almost the opposite. Like the winds have shifted, and I don't. And that's good, right? I mean,
well, yeah, they're looking for new episodes now. You've built it as a brand that works.
Yeah. So
When you're, I'm just going to say the one line: when you're in cuffs, comma. Remember that one?
Oh, sure do. So I have a new, in fact, I'll tell you, I haven't recorded, well, I have recorded it, but it's a little too long, so I've got to shorten it up. So I have a new batch of ads that are going to be coming out, and I have a new kind of, I'm not going to call it a tagline, but it just sort of happened naturally because this sort of is how things are going. But what do you think about this? So part of the commercial is, or the end of the commercial is, you're not our only client. But we hope that you feel like you are. Get it?
A little
it?
Wordy.
Very nice. No, I like it. I like the idea.
I like what you're saying, but I feel like that you might be able to pull a word or two out of there.
Pull a word or two? Okay. So you're only, but R. Got it.
She didn't mean for you to make it sound like your internet was crapping out.
Oh, I'll have to work on it. Like I said, I wish commercials could be longer than a minute. It's hard to get a lot of info.
It must go so fast. Yeah.
Well, I remember that well there, Spielberg, because I'm the one that always recorded your commercials, and you always came in with like a minute and a half worth of stuff that we had to edit down.
But you took it so well. Yeah, Carol, you would miss it. I would come in and I would record like a 2.5 minute commercial, and I would just do it really fast. Like, blah, 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 and then it'd be 2.5 minutes, and I'd look at Frank and Barry and go, "You got that right, FB? You got that right?"
Yeah. And I'd be like, "Yeah, get out of here. I'll talk to you later."
It's incredible. It often makes me wonder, like, now they have you. Do you, this is like a business question, but are you finding that your clients are recording themselves on apps? Like, now, do you think AI is taking some of the load off you, or you haven't noticed anything yet?
Oh, well, I mean, look, I have discovered that there are some AI software programs that will do a very good job at cleaning up an audio, like say somebody records their commercial on their phone, mm-hmm. and then they send you that, and sometimes that can sound like they're in a very hollow room, or like, you know, you know, sometimes it even sounds like they're sitting on their toilet because they're in a room surrounded by, you know, tile. But I found some AI software does do a very good job of cleaning that up and making it sound like more of a normal read. So that's the only thing I've used AI for.
Can I give you a little PSA to those who are listening when it comes to AI? And that might be a useful tool for AI. And I have found AI useful for a number of things. And we have special legal AI stuff at the office. But if I could just say, if you are not a lawyer and you have not retained a lawyer, even though you should retain a lawyer, and you think for 1 minute that you are going to be able to AI represent yourself in any sort of lawsuit, please rethink it. I have right now, I'm representing somebody and the other party is unrepresented. And oh, no. I am being bombarded with this nonsense. You can tell it's AI generated, number one. You can tell by the way it looks. You can tell by the line. You can tell it all. Like, it was just like ChatGPT. And none of it makes a bit of sense. And every time I have to read an email or read a document that gets uploaded into this case, I'm like, oh, shoot me. Just shoot me. So it's not going to work. So I'm telling people, you're not going to be able to replace lawyers, sorry, with ChatGPT. Not this, anytime soon.
This must be how doctors have felt in recent decades about like WebMD, right? That people come with a pain or an ache or an illness and they're like, I think it's this. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, I've made the WebMD mistake in the past, and I'm surprised I'm still alive. You know, I mean, you can check, you know, simple wart on your finger with WebMD, and you're going to have your entire arm amputated by the end of the day.
Oh, now you sound like Jonna.
I hate to break it to you, too, but I'm practically a doctor, thanks to Google. And I happily diagnose and treat myself all the time. Thank you very much. But you're right. You're absolutely right. When people come in and they talk to a doctor, like, I think I have, and the doctor rolls their eyes.
Yes,
I get
exactly.
It. Now I totally get it. Because this didn't happen in my field before. This did not happen before ChatGPT. Because in the legal profession around here, there are some, like the court website will have DIY forms. And if you ever go to a DIY form on the court website, you're going to be cross-eyed for a good 8 hours. You can't DIY this stuff. And then here comes ChatGPT, and all of a sudden people think they can DIY, and all it's doing is driving me crazy.
Well, and I would also say that, look, you are a very experienced and brilliant lawyer. But the more people you go up against that are using AI, hey, I think it's going to increase your chances of being successful.
That, you know what? Always looking on the bright side. You are always so mindful and self-aware. It's un-freaking believable.
I was fishing. I was fishing for something.
You were fishing.
I did it.
Fishing. But that works. It works.
I did it this time. It was me.
Ooh.
I did it.
All right, yeah. Drop it. Cut her mic. Coming up after the break, we will be talking with Matt Tenney. He's got an amazing story. He's the author of multiple books. His latest book that he's here to talk with us today about is The Magic of Mindful Self-Awareness, How to Stop Overthinking, Clear Your Mind, and Be Happy Almost All of the Time. And if you missed my comments about it when we opened the show, I started the book yesterday and last night had one of the best nights of sleep I've had in a long time. And if that's all I get out of this book, I'm golden.
All right. That sounds good. That is who we have on the way next for segment number two. For Jonas Spilborg, Carol Pesci, I am that fella who, by the way, wants to remind you, and I'm sure we'll bring this up in segment three, but AI, it tastes great on a steak. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Oh, brother.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back, everybody, to Happy Hour. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, some fella, and a guest. A guest, I know. You're saying to yourselves, a guest? Well, that's exciting. It is. We're going to have a guest here in segment number two, and we are going to talk to a Matt Tenney.
Yes, and I'm super excited about this because you all know that I love to read and learn. And okay, and of course there's a car out front and my dog wants to talk to him. Okay, leave it. Come on. Thank you. Okay, so with us today, and this is life, with us today we have Matt Tenney. And since 2002, he has helped thousands of people to apply mindful self-awareness to be happier, less stressed, and more effective. Who doesn't want that? He has also helped hundreds of clients, including many Fortune 500 companies, to develop highly effective leaders who improve employee engagement, performance, and retention through his books, consulting work, and via the groundbreaking leadership development and employee engagement platform offered by his company, People Thriver. He's the author of Serve to Be Great, Inspire Greatness, and today he is here to talk to us about his latest book, The Magic of Mindful Self-Awareness, How to Stop Overthinking, Clear Your Mind, and Be Happy Almost All of the Time. Okay, Matt Tenney, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Carol. It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Jonna and I are both avid consumers of self-improvement and self-help, and we read all of the time. I started your book yesterday, and I did say this in the intro when we mentioned that you were going to be on the show today, that as a result of starting your book yesterday, I had one of the best nights of sleep I've had in a very long time last night by practicing one of your very simple techniques. And I can't begin to tell you, I feel like I can function today. I feel bright. I feel relaxed. I feel healthy. Like, just that piece in itself is an absolute gift. And at first, I want to start by thanking you for that. But of all the books that I've read, and I understand the concept of mindfulness, I have monkey brain often, where my thoughts are just like, I almost am like, what is wrong with it? They can't just stop or slow down. And your book, I think, is going to help so many people. I know it's already helping me. And I also find that your story, which I did not mention yet, I told Jonna and Frankie Berry, but I did not mention it on air yet, your story is fascinating. And I would love if you would begin there. What is the backstory of how you came to know what you know about the power of mindfulness?
Well, it was principally as the result of the greatest failure of my life, or at least at the time I thought it was the greatest failure and the worst thing that ever happened to me. And it was all self-created. You know, I had suffered from anxiety and bouts of depression my whole life. And there was, as I was, this is a few years out of college, about 25 years ago, I was getting out of the Marine Corps, and it's kind of this perfect storm kind of all came together where the anxiety had kind of built up to a point, the depression had built up to a point, and I learned about how easy it was for a colleague of mine to deliver a large sum of government money for our deployment. And I, to make a long story short, there's obviously more details in the book, but I ultimately decided to at least see if I could find out if I could arrange a delivery of a large sum of money. I told myself that this would somehow solve all of my problems and I might finally be happy. Maybe I could go to some, you know, beautiful country and do volunteer work. And, you know, I just believed all this self-talk that is essentially nonsense, but I took some steps to arrange a delivery of unauthorized delivery of funds. And once I had the delivery arranged, I said, man, there's no way I can do this. I don't want to be a criminal. I never even had a plan for picking it up. So I abandoned the whole thing. But I had taken enough steps. I'd done several dishonest things. I was very stupid. And I'd taken enough steps to be guilty of an attempted fraud. And as a result of doing those things, I ended up spending 5.5 years confined to prison. And of course, at first I thought it was the worst things that ever happened to me. And my life was over. And I was so angry at myself because I caused so much suffering for my friends and my family and my peers. And there was a while where I was suicidal. I just had suicidal thoughts just flashing through my mind almost continuously for weeks at one point. And then I eventually started to adjust. And about a year into my time in confinement, you know, I started learning about mindfulness. And the concept that grabbed me, that really caught my attention, was reading a book written by a monk. And he just proposed this very simple idea, which is that if we're not comparing the present moment experience to our thoughts of the past or our hopes for a better future, the present moment, for most of the time, well, let's just say 95% of the time, the present moment is just fine. You know, and so, like, for instance, let's just use my example of being in a prison cell. You know, let's say that I'm brushing my teeth in a prison cell. If I'm truly just brushing my teeth, like, to make it even easier, imagine if you're doing this with your eyes closed. And if you're just brushing your teeth, fully engaged in the activity of brushing the teeth, and you're not comparing it to all the times you brush your teeth previously in your life or all the times you might do it in the future, how is brushing your teeth in a prison cell any different than brushing your teeth in a 5-star hotel in the tropics or in your house with your family? There is no difference, right? It's just brushing the teeth.
Uh-huh.
And so this caught my attention, and I realized that, wow, you know, it's not so much what happens to us that is the problem in our life. The problems in our life are almost entirely a function of what we think about what happens to us. So if I was just brushing the teeth and not caught in comparative thinking, then I realized, you know, I think I could be happy while brushing the teeth in prison. Well, if I could do that while brushing the teeth, why couldn't I do that while I was washing my hands or getting dressed or eating food or making the bed? You kind of see where this is going, right? It's like in any moment that I wasn't comparing my present moment experience to my hopes for a better future, present moment was just fine. And so after about 6 months of training in this way, I was making the effort to be mindfully self-aware, just observing my own mind and body fully engaged in the present moment experience. I was happier in prison with no possessions, no fun, no girlfriend than I'd ever been in my entire life.
Wow.
But it,
and so that's because you learned to be mindful and in the moment and be aware of your thoughts rather than being wrapped up in them, and to not practice comparative thinking.
Yeah, it's not that we have to get rid of thinking. I wasn't trying to eliminate thoughts from the mind. The powerful shift is to learn to see thoughts objectively. Because when we see them objectively, what happens is they arise and they pass away, which is what they're designed to do. When we engage with them, when we get caught up in them, then we just create these thought loops. And before we know it, you know, what could have happened while I was brushing my teeth in my prison cell? I could have, you know, let's say I had a thought, oh, here I am in a prison cell. Now, if I just see that thought objectively, it arises and passes away, no problem. But if I start engaging with that and I start adding on to it, like, oh yeah, I'm in a prison cell. Next door, there's somebody who wants to shank me. There's guards outside who treat us in inhumane ways, like we're not even people. I'm going to be here 5 years. There's razor wire everywhere. The food is terrible. You see, like, little by little, I'm creating hell out of a moment. Mm-hmm. There was nothing wrong with that moment until my thoughts started creating all of that. So that's really the trick. Is it's not that we have to get rid of thoughts. It's just if we see them as objects, then they function how they're supposed to function, which is they arise. If they're skillful, we can engage with them, use them. If they're not skillful, that we allow them to just pass on.
One of the concepts you also say in your book that I've read and heard multiple times in the past is we become our thoughts. Like, we identify that that's who we are, and who we truly are is the awareness behind those thoughts, because we are who we are, whether those thoughts are there, whether we're judging them, whether they're not there. So we can't be those thoughts, but we are the awareness behind the thoughts. Can you speak to that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think a simple thought experiment can illustrate what you're talking about, but you're absolutely right. You know, I think we tend to operate as though we are the thoughts in our heads. particularly, I think the most sticky one is the inner voice, right? We think that there's a voice in there, and we think that's me in there talking. Right. But I'm sure everyone's had the experience of saying something to the effect of, "Wow, I can't believe you just did that. You're so stupid." Well, that gives rise to a pretty sticky question, you know, which is like, all right, well, which one is the you that's talking? And it's which true. One's the you that was stupid that you're upset at? And you can go back and forth for a long time. And eventually what you'll realize is neither of them are you, because you exist even if there's no inner voice. So let's just imagine hypothetically. I know for many people this might sound impossible, but I absolutely promise you this is possible for everyone. That you can be, let's just say you're sitting still in a quiet place. You can experience reality without a single thought present in the mind. No visual image, no inner voice, just silence. And all of experience is encompassed with what's coming into your senses. This is possible. So let's just imagine, hypothetically, that you're doing that. You're sitting and there hasn't been a thought for 15, 20 seconds, just perfect clarity of mind. And then all of a sudden a thought comes up like, oh, this is cool. I haven't felt this peaceful in a long time. You can hear that thought and then it goes away. And then it's just emptiness again, just pure experience, hearing things, feeling things, smelling things, feeling things. So the question is, like, you obviously existed when the mind was empty of thought. There was something there aware of what was coming into your senses, right? And then obviously you were there when that inner voice chimed in and said, oh, this is cool. And then you could listen to that voice as though it was coming in from a speaker or coming in through earbuds, and then it goes away and you're still there. You still exist. So clearly the inner voice is not what we are. It is something that can be observed. It can be listened to just as someone's listening to this radio show with that level of objectivity.
It sounds minute. It sounds subtle. Like maybe you don't even fully understand listening to what we're talking about, the difference between having the thought and observing the thought. But that minor separation can be a massive step in having less anxiety and stress and worry and fear, right?
Oh, absolutely. When a thought is observed objectively, it cannot provoke an emotion in the body. It is only when we believe those thoughts, when we identify with them, get caught up in them, that an emotion comes up. So here's a kind of an analogy. Have you ever, imagine everyone has watched a movie from start to finish, a suspenseful, thrilling movie, right? Where you're really in it and your palms are sweating, your heartbeat is high, your breath is short. You're feeling what the actors feel. It's like it's real for you, right? You're really in it. And then I'm sure maybe not everyone, but most of us, or if you haven't, you could at least imagine this as a thought experiment. Imagine that you walk into a movie halfway through. You're just in the kitchen having a snack. You walk in, someone in your family's watching a movie. It's the same level of suspense, and they're in there with their palms all sweaty. Their breath rate is fast. Their heart rate is fast. And you walk in and nothing happens to you. You just look at it and say, oh, this is a bunch of actors on a screen, and here's my family member. Here's my family member, you know, very immersed in it. No emotion arises for you because you're seeing it objectively. You're seeing it as what it really is. These are actors on a screen being filmed, and now it's projected on the screen in our house. This is how we can relate to thoughts, where when we see them with objectivity, they don't provoke any negative response in the body.
Matt, I want to share your technique in the book, and you could explain it further. It's a 5-minute, call it a meditation, if you will. That is what helped me sleep better last night. So I've mentioned I have monkey brain. Like, my thoughts just go on and on and on. It's not necessarily worry or fear. It's sometimes just stupid stuff, but it's just like in succession, like reviewing what happened, what do I have going on tomorrow? And then it just goes on, like, and that will keep me from falling asleep for a very long time. Oh man. And then I'll hear my husband's breathing change in like 45 seconds. And like, you, ooh. And then if I wake up to roll over in the night, oh, here we go again. So your simple technique of where you suggest, okay, just sit down, sit still, sit upright, but comfortable, close your eyes and just say, I'm sitting, like the observer of what you're doing. I'm sitting. And all I kept doing last night was, I'm just laying here. I'm just laying here. It was that freaking simple.
Oh my gosh.
That calmed my mind separated me from the thoughts, slowed them down, and mostly disappeared, and I slept. It was amazing.
Yeah, I think the practice you're referring to is what I call the ultimate vacation. And I call it that because it's a true chance to accomplish what I think what we really all want. If we really think about when we take a vacation, what do we really want? And obviously there are some vacations you take where you're trying to have some experience, right? You're trying to go see something beautiful and see some historic landmark or something. But I think in general, you know, when we take a vacation, what we really want is to not be continuously doing and reacting to all the things that are required of us, right? We want a break. So what we really are looking for is the opportunity to just simply be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I call the ultimate vacation, because it is an opportunity to have that type of vacation where you can just simply be. There's nothing you have to do, nowhere you have to go, but you don't have to spend any money to do this. You don't have to get on an airplane. You don't have to pack any bags. You can do this whenever you want. Ideally, right before bedtime, because that's the time where I think we have the most control over our lives. We're all allowed to sleep, you know, most of us, I think, listening to the show, hopefully, are not in physical danger where we're worried about our physical safety as we're falling asleep. So this is time that we have control over. And it's something, so it's easy to make it a habit. And you're exactly right. The idea is, so there's how we're normally operating is, again, it feels as though we are that voice in our heads. And when you just use a simple mental noting to note what it is that the body's doing, all of a sudden something shifts. Where as soon as, like as you mentioned, if you just mentally note, just sitting, well, as soon as that voice goes silent, guess what you're doing? You're observing the mind and listening to it, principally by just being aware of the body. So as soon as you note, just sitting, all of a sudden there's this objective view of the body sitting. And then it sounds like you transitioned from the sitting to lying and you continued, right? You just kind of said, it's not like you're repeating it as a mantra. You're not saying this every 5 seconds. It's just every now and then you notice, oh, there's some thinking, no big deal. And now, just lying.
Mm-hmm.
Just lying down.
That's all I did. And for those listening, so we're speaking with Matt Tenney, T-E-N-N-E-Y. You have free downloadable audio of you guiding people for this meditation on your website.
Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, in the book, it's nice to be able to read it, but I think it's also nice to have a voice that can kind of guide you through it so that you're not having to work too hard on your own.
I was just going to say, Matt, this is Jonna. I love the concept. I love the theory. I love that my good friend was able to go to sleep. And I also think this is completely impossible. I'm sitting here going, can't do it. No, can do it. I ain't going to do it. I can't do that. I can't do it. There's no way I could do that. How am I going to do that? How am I going to do that? Seriously.
Well, the first step is to bring that up intentionally. So what is that? What all that stuff that's going on in your head, that's just more thinking, right? So like if you feel like a thought's really sticky, the whole point is to try to make it objective. And this show is all about fun, right? This is happy hour. You know, I think it's only what, just past noon, and I think you all are drunk already, right? So I mean, this is like this is exactly what your show is all about, right? So this make it fun. You know, if you're having these thoughts that keep coming up, like I can't do this. And by the way, this is, Jonna, this is very common. People who are type A, high achievers, if they sit still for more than 30 seconds, there's a voice in there saying, what are you doing? You got to go do something.
Yes, that's our... Right?
You got to go accomplish something. And this is very, very natural. But what you can do is, the whole point is you want to make that very clearly something that you can see objectively. And an easy way to do that is to bring it up intentionally. So I would recommend, as you're trying this, if thoughts come up about, I can't do this, I am just too hyperactive, I can't sit still, make it silly. You know, just actually say it in your mind kind of loud, like, there's no way I could do this, I am too busy. And then just pause and see.
And then laugh at yourself. Yeah.
Exactly. But right there, there's a little bit of space between you and those thoughts, between awareness and those thoughts. And that right there is a few seconds of freedom. And then 10 seconds later, you're going to be right back in it, thinking about everything. And then just bring it up. You could just say in your mind with the inner voice, just note, oh, there's a lot of thinking. There's no way I can do this. I'm too crazy. And just listen to it. That's it. So the idea is, we're not trying to get rid of something. We're not trying to change, you know, make these huge changes. We're just noticing what is actually there. And when you notice what is actually there, you start to unwind all of the fuel for all of those thoughts that you think are going to prevent you from ever doing this.
And Matt, you say it's not only noticing, but it's naming what you're doing, naming what you're
In the short term, yes. I think that's a very skillful means in the short term to use mental noting to note what's present, because what it does is it's like a pattern interrupt where you're kind of consciously using the inner voice to interrupt the habitual ways of acting and thinking. And so when you use mental noting to just simply note what's there, it's a pattern interrupt that immediately brings you to this subjective awareness that we're talking about.
Matt, this time is going way too fast, but there's something that you talked about in your book that in theory I understood, but I was like, wow, that's it. Can you speak for a moment, and it has to do with this future happiness, how you say when you were in a certain grade in high school and you looked at the older kids and you were like, oh man, it'd be cool to be that old. I'll be happy when I'm that old. And then you became that old and you're like, oh wow. Can you talk about that process that illustrates how we're always putting our happiness in the future?
Yeah, I would imagine most of us can relate to this, right?
Oh my gosh, I could totally.
When you're in middle school, you see all the high schoolers and you say, oh man, life will be so much better when I can drive a car and date and do all those things. Then you get to high school and you're stressed, more stressed out than ever. You know, the hormones are raging and you're like, well, you know, once I get to college, then I'll really be happy once I'm in college. Or once I finish and, you know, start working after high school, whatever direction you take. And then you get there and you're like, oh man, you know, once I get married, then I'll be happy. Then of course we all know that doesn't fix anything. You know, that's just more work, right? You have to really work to have a strong relationship in a marriage. It's just not this magic happy pill. And I think, you know, the question, of course, I think we should all be asking ourselves is, where does this end? You know, there are people that win $10 million in the lottery and they have this huge spike in short-term happiness. And a year later, they're right back where they were, sometimes worse.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they're less happy. So there's nothing outside of ourselves that's ever going to bring us lasting satisfaction. This is something I think we need to come to terms with as quickly as possible. And that's why I see my time in confinement as such a gift. I think intellectually, we can maybe wrap our heads around that. Like, yeah, I get that. Like, you know, no matter what I achieve, I'm always going to be thinking about what's the next thing. What's the next thing I have to do to truly be satisfied? Well, I had this amazing gift of realizing that, wow, you don't need any of that. Like, you can truly be happy with just being alive is enough. Just being alive and breathing is enough to realize true fulfillment. And counterintuitively, when we learn to rest in that sense of satisfaction, where we're perfectly content with what we have now and what's happening now, our odds of being quote unquote successful in worldly terms go up dramatically, because you're approaching each situation with a clearer mind, with more positive emotions. You're less anxious, you're happier, people want to be around you more, you're more creative, you're more innovative. All these things happen as a result of the peace that comes from being perfectly okay with what you have now and what's happening now.
And you're not suggesting to not have goals. I mean, we're goal-striving mechanisms. It's normal for us to want to achieve. And so setting goals, wanting to do things, that's all healthy. It's when we apply our current happiness dependent upon that thing happening, right?
Absolutely. I set huge goals. And I read about this in the book. I don't think you've gotten to that chapter yet, Carol, but you will soon. And it's not that you make the perfect distinction. We're setting these big goals, not because I think if I achieve them, that's going to bring me satisfaction or happiness. It's because why not? Like, it makes it fun when we're working to achieve something big, because we're growing. We have to learn new things, try new things. And so it's really about, you know, I think setting challenging goals actually makes the journey more fun, provided that we realize it's the accomplishing the goal is not what's going to bring us the satisfaction. It's the growth that comes through working towards achieving that goal. That's where it's at. And so if we're not able to be present with what's happening now and appreciate what's happening now, then we will never be satisfied. We're skipping over the whole part of our life, the journey towards achieving the goal. That's where the happiness is, not the achievement of it.
Matt, time is running short. I wish we could keep going, because I'm just so enthralled by you and your take on such a topic that has such strong ability to help people live better, happier, healthier. And then if you think about the ripple effect of that as each of us, as siblings, as spouses, as leaders, which is a large part of what you do, the ripple effect is just massive. So we're wrapping up here with Matt Tenney, former convicted felon, former Marine, now incredible, brilliant author who spends his time inspiring leaders and other people to be happier and live more fulfilling lives. If people want to learn more about you, Matt, where do they, or and buy your books, how do they do that?
Oh, the books are available on Amazon for sure. And in any place books are sold, and for most of the books, I think the newest one is might not be available everywhere, but also if you'd like some resources that are helpful to you, matttenney.com is the website. And there's also, for those of you who are really interested in mindful self-awareness, there's a YouTube channel called The Magic of Mindful Self-Awareness. And really all I do is just answer people's questions on there. So every video now is just somebody asks a question, I just try to give an answer that's helpful.
Do you ever do videos where that question is asked of you on video? Because I think Jonna would be perfect to do that with you.
Yeah, it's actually how the channel started. I used to conduct a live kind of, I guess, leading a mindfulness community, and all the questions were just recorded live. But then COVID happened and people didn't want to meet in person anymore, and me included for a little while. So it took some time off. And then I realized, you know, there's a lot of people asking questions online. Like, I don't like producing content unless I know someone's going to get value out of it. And if somebody's asking a question, then I know answering that, at least one person's going to get value out of it. And I'm sure other people are asking similar things. So
gotcha.
I kind of Matt brought the channel Tenney back to life.
Thank you so much for being such an inspiration and for taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We have to have you back. I'm sorry. We just have to for a part two. This was too good, honestly. And this is coming from somebody who can't quiet her mind down, but I love the idea and I need to work on it more. So.
As she walks off trying to quiet her mind down. Nicely done. All right, Matt, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And we're not done with Happy Hour here just yet. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and this guy here, we will return in just a couple. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again one more time here to Happy Hour. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, thank you.
Hello.
Well, at least that one was new, Jonna.
We have to go fast.
Yes. Okay.
So we're short on time.
Oh, that's right. Because we don't have much time left. That's right. So we can't be meandering around molasses like that Frankenberry fella. But anyway, Matt Tenney, he was amazing. He was interesting. I know you two were big fans.
What a story, right? To go from being a Marine to thinking I'm going to use the idea of procuring millions of dollars from the government as a novel to actually taking steps to do it, changing your mind, getting arrested, going to prison for 6 years, then discovering this power of mindfulness and now spreading that word and helping other people. It's just incredible.
What it really seems to be about, this is the hard part for me. What it seems to be about is choosing what you're going to think or not think about. And I think the muscle memory has to come in learning how to chew, right? Like when he gave the example right in the beginning of our talk, like if you're brushing your teeth in a prison cell, all I kept thinking of was, you know, you're drinking Pruno out of your toilet and you're eating glop for three meals a day and you're waiting to get kicked and punched at any time. Like, how do you choose to turn that off versus choosing what other thought you're going to turn on? That's where the exercise comes in. And that's right. What I'm going to try what you did. I'm going to try. I guarantee you I will fail tonight if I try to sit.
Oh, stop. In my bed.
I know if I say I'm just laying here, I'm going to fail, but I'm going to try it because maybe I need to do that 100 times before it actually works.
Go to his website because he's got the 5-minute guided one. That is exactly that. And put your earbuds in and listen and have him guide you to do it.
Okay, pumpkin.
Okay, pumpkin.
Yes. All right, we got
to
go.
Okay, yes. Back to speedy talk. So, yes, again, Matt Tenney, thank you very much for joining us. Also, if you can, with her earbuds in, slow Jonna down for just a second. You've obviously done such a thing for Carol. That would be welcome. So anyway, Happy Hour. We'll be back again next week. So join us again then. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, this dude here. And Thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104Online.com.